Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth here in this matter before?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, the record should show also Deborah Wong Brooks is the certified court reporter who administered the oath and is taking a transcription of the testimony. State your name for the record, ma'am.
Judy Berry.
What is the basic event out of which the case arose?
On May 24th of 1990, I was bombed and nearly killed in a car bomb assassination attempt. I was arrested by Oakland police officers.
You said you were bombed. Where did this occur?
In Oakland, California. It's on 34th and Park, something like that.
Okay. And what exactly happened to you?
What happened when the bomb went off?
Yes.
Where were you? I was driving my car, and I was driving down the street, and I was following somebody because we were trying to go to her home. I didn't know the way well, so I was supposed to follow her, and she was driving a little fast for me to keep up with her. And what I remember is that at a certain point, I think she was getting ready to make a turn, and I was trying to follow her and realized I wasn't going right, and I quickly hit the brake. And at the time when I hit the brake, there was a very huge explosion, and I felt it rip through me. I felt it from underneath of me, and I don't remember what happened in the next couple of minutes. I remember the explosion being so powerful that the sound itself had a force. I remember the explosion very clearly, and I certainly remember the place that it came from, which was directly underneath me.
I'm sorry. What led you to believe that the explosion occurred underneath you?
I felt it. I felt a huge force that came from directly below me. It was the hugest thing I'd ever felt in my life. It was the most violent force I'd ever felt, and it was directional. And it came from below me, and I felt it. I felt it rip through my body.
And what happened next that you can recall?
The next thing I remember, the car was stopped, and there were people around, and I was in incredible pain that I had never felt before. I knew my back was broken. My legs both were immobile at the time. I knew that my body was ruined. I knew that I was paralyzed. I felt that I was dying. I don't remember exact conversation, but I do remember just saying, I'm dying, my back is broken. I remember them trying to take me out of the car and that I didn't think there could be any pain worse than I was already experiencing. But when they lifted me out of the car, it was beyond horror. I remember trying to think of reasons to stay alive.
So you recall them removing you from the car?
Yes.
And was someone in the car with you when the explosion occurred?
Yes, Daryl Cherney was riding in the passenger seat.
And were you aware of what had happened to him before you were taken out of the car?
No, I remember hearing him say,
"Objection.
I love
you." Were you aware of with respect to Daryl?
I was not aware of what injuries he had or didn't have.
Okay.
I remember him telling me that he loved me and that I was going to live.
Do you remember Daryl saying anything to you while you were still in the car?
Just what I said. I remember him saying that he loved me, and I remember him saying that I was going to live.
And then what can you tell us about that you can recall about being removed from the car?
I just remember incredible pain. I was not conscious enough of what was being done to me to describe that, except that it was incredible pain.
And what's the next thing you remember after being taken out of the car?
I remember being placed on a gurney, which again was another incredible pain. I remember being put in an ambulance. I remember going to the hospital in the ambulance. I remember repeating that my back was broken. Because I wanted them to know.
Do you recall arriving at the hospital?
Yes, I remember being moved again and again being in incredible pain.
Uh-huh. And what happened when you got to the hospital when you were moved? Where did they take you?
I don't know.
And what's the next thing you do know that happened?
I remember a nurse hugging me and telling me that they were going to put me unconscious and that I would probably wake up with a one of those little colon bags, I forget what they're called. And I remember begging them to let me die, and that's the last thing I remember before I lost consciousness.
Do you remember talking to anyone before losing consciousness besides the between the time you got to the hospital and the time you went in the emergency room?
I remember people around, but I don't remember talking to any of them. I remember people talking at me, but I didn't understand what was going on.
Do you remember any statements that you made at the time about what happened or about who might have been responsible for what happened?
No.
Okay. And do you remember being in the operating room?
No.
Do you remember... Is there anything besides the nurse talking to you about when you would wake up that you can recall that happened before you then lost consciousness?
No.
Okay. And what's the next thing that you remember that happened when you woke up again?
I remember waking up and finding myself completely immobile and my leg up in a traction device. And I remember that there were two uniformed police standing next to me as soon as I opened my eyes. And that they talked.
Where were you when you woke up?
I just know I was in a hospital bed. I don't know anything else than that.
But in a hospital room?
Yes, and I didn't seem to be a private room. There seemed to be curtains.
Did the officer speak to you when you woke up?
Yes.
And what did they say?
They told me that I was under arrest, and they said they wanted to, for transporting explosives, I guess. I don't remember their exact words, but I came to understand that I was under arrest for transporting the bomb.
You're saying when you came to understand from the conversation?
From the conversation. I'm just not remembering the exact words.
Mm-hmm. That you were under arrest?
And that they wanted to question me.
And do you know, how many of these officers were there?
I remember two.
And you say they were in uniform. Do you know their names or any badge number, any other identifying characteristics?
No.
You remember what they looked like?
No.
What was your condition at the time that you awoke and first spoke to these officers?
I was heavily drugged.
And could you see and hear all right at that point?
My perception was hazy, but I saw and heard enough to understand that there were two uniformed officers speaking to me. Yeah.
And did you also gather at that time what it was that you were under arrest for? Did they tell you?
They must have told me, but I don't remember their exact words. I do remember understanding
the substance of what they told you?
The substance was that I was under arrest for transporting explosives.
What do you remember about what they asked you in terms of questions?
Only what I just told you.
Okay. And what was your response at that time?
I said I wouldn't talk to them without a lawyer.
And what was their response?
I don't remember.
And what else transpired in that conversation?
Again,
I don't remember.
Were you aware of who these officers worked for? What police agency they were part of?
No.
Do you remember anything else about the conversation that you had at that time?
No.
Did they leave while you were still awake?
I don't recall. I went kind of drifted back into semi-consciousness shortly after. It was a brief conversation, and I don't know what happened to them or whatever.
And what's the next recollection that you have?
In the hospital, just in general?
In the hospital.
I remember a reporter coming to see me. I remember being told that as was a prisoner, nobody was allowed to touch me.
Who told you that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I next remember my parents coming to visit me, and again, I remember that they weren't allowed to touch me. I remember that my... Should I keep going, or is
when
that
they,
a narrative?
When your parents came, struggling, do you know how long it was after that first conversation with the two officers that you saw your parents?
No.
Do you know if it was the same day or the next day, or what day?
No.
Okay. Numbers of days after. Did you have a visit with your parents?
Yes. And I remember them bringing in a tape recorder and asking me to make a statement on the tape for a newspaper. And I remember attempting to do that in a groggy state.
Mm-hmm. And what happened after that? What's the next thing that happened after that?
The next thing I remember is my ex-husband coming to visit me.
Is that the same day that your parents came?
I don't know.
And in between these visits, did you see medical people in the hospital that you can recall talking to?
I remember seeing doctors and nurses, but I don't remember any specifics of my interactions with them.
Okay. And besides besides your parents, were your did your children come to see you?
Not until months later.
You didn't see them at all until months later?
No.
Did you get any additional information in that first period about the charges against you or about the circumstances of your arrest?
Not at that time. At some point, I was in the critical care room. And at one point, I was taken and moved. And I was moved to the jail ward. And this, I understood, was because I was under arrest. And, should I keep going?
Yes.
Okay, so I remember...
Who moved you?
I don't remember. I don't know. I wasn't aware, I guess is what I really need to say. And I remember being in the jail ward. I remember being in a room with a curtain. And there was a woman who was in labor on the other side of the curtain. I remember feeling great despair. There were no nurses or anything that came by, and I knew that I was very sick. And then at some undetermined time, because I had no sense of time during this 10 days, that's why I'm not able to answer your questions about how many days transpired, but I remember being taken back out of the jail ward and back to the critical care ward. I believe you asked me whether I saw any lawyers while in that early period in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and I replied no, but I recalled that actually I did see a lawyer during that period. A lawyer came in my room named Susan Jordan.
And did you have a conversation with her?
Yes.
And did she inform you of the circumstances of the charges against you at all?
I don't recall anything of the conversation.
Okay. And... At the time of the bombing, what was your occupation?
My occupation was a carpenter, but I was on a leave of absence.
And what were you doing in the leave of absence?
I was organizing for Earth First Redwood Summer.
And what was Redwood Summer? What is Earth First and what is Redwood Summer?
Earth First is an environmental group, and in this region we fight to save the Redwood Forest. And Redwood Summer was a campaign that we initiated in 1990 to bring in students and others from around the country to participate in a summer-long exercise of demonstrations, nonviolent civil disobedience, but with a very strong nonviolence code, and the object of it was to have people come in for nonviolent demonstrations.
What were the demonstrations going to be about?
The overcutting of the redwoods.
And where were they planned to take place?
Various places. Mendocino County and Humboldt County would be the main ones. The three timber companies that own most of the redwoods were the primary targets: Louisiana Pacific, Georgia Pacific, and Maxam Pacific Lumber.
And how long had you been working with Earth First at that time?
Since 1988.
And was that in California or elsewhere as well?
It was in California.
Okay. And this was in 1990 that Redwood Summer was announced?
That's right.
When you joined Redwood Summer, I mean Earth First, did you have experience in organizing and advocacy?
Extensive.
And what was the nature of that experience?
My primary organizing experience was in the union movement, both in the retail clerks union when I worked at the grocery store and in the American Postal Workers Union at the post office.
And what jobs did you have in the union?
Well, I was shop steward at both locations, and I helped organize and lead strikes at both places.
How did you first get involved in the strike?
I was working as a carpenter making houses out of old growth redwood and became disturbed at the houses were out in the woods, so they were like rich people's houses. So I was watching the trucks go by with the logs on them while I was building these, you know, fancy houses out of the wood, and the contradiction disturbed me. I knew about the Mendocino Environmental Center because they're a very prominent organization in our area, and I, through them, found out about Earth First and other activities to save the redwoods and volunteered myself.
And where did you come in contact with the people you volunteered with?
At the Mendocino Environmental Center.
Okay, and what kind of activities did you then get involved in?
The first thing that we did was we had a demonstration where we marched through Ukiah in costumes protesting the destruction of rainforest wood at Burger King. It was kind of a little national thing they were doing. That's the first demonstration I was involved in.
And after that, where did that activity lead you to? What further activities were you led into?
James Watt came to speak in Ukiah, and we had another demonstration in which we dressed up in costumes and sang songs and went to protest his environmental stands at the conference where he was. That was there.
What was the mission of Earth First at the time you joined up with it? Well, how did they see themselves? What did they set themselves up in? Just what you learned and your understanding, what you came to understand about Earth First.
That Earth First was an environmental group that used what they called direct action to try to bring attention to and halt destruction of the environment, and that it was a decentralized group so that each local Earth First chapter, although they're not actually called that, but each local Earth First chapter set its own agenda, and our agenda primarily concerned the redwoods.
And how many people were associated with Earth First in this area at the time you joined up, roughly?
When I first joined, there was about 200 people on a mailing list, and 25 would show up at a meeting.
And besides the kind of demonstrations that you described a minute ago, what other activities did they engage in? Did the group engage in?
The first prolonged campaign up here that I engaged in was at a place called Caddo Wilderness in Laytonville. And it was a Bureau of Land Management land. It had old growth on it, and protecting old growth was our really primary mission. And we set ourselves up in the middle of the road and physically blocked the logging equipment from getting to the place where they were supposed to cut.
And what happened as a result of your sitting in the road like that?
The neighbors formed a neighborhood group and filed a lawsuit, and the place was saved.
And did those activities sometimes involve the Earth First people getting arrested?
Yes.
And in what circumstances did that occur?
Well, people climbed trees and sat in the trees to stop them from being cut. Sometimes when people, if you physically block a log road, you're obviously risking arrest. People chained themselves to logging equipment. So the basic activity was nonviolent civil disobedience, and there were regularly arrests associated with that.
And up until the time that Redwood Summer was conceived of, or that project was begun, were there any other particular protest activities that you were involved in besides the ones you told us about?
Constant from the time that I came. It was a growing organization and growingly active. We protested, well, one large one, for example, in 1989, we had what we called National Tree Sit Week. And different Earth First branches from different states. We simultaneously, during 1 week, each staged tree sits in 7 different states. In our area, we held 5 demonstrations in 6 days around Mendocino and Humboldt County, sitting in trees and blocking logging trucks during that week.
How were those activities coordinated with people in other areas?
The like National Tree Sit Week?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Well, National Tree Sit Week, each group, each different state was completely independent as to how they organized. In our immediate area, people from the Bay Area came up and participated, but the local people from Mendocino and Humboldt County organized the actions, chose the sites, chose the style and manner of the action, and the people from our immediate region outside of us came up and helped. They joined the demonstrations. In some cases, they participated in climbing the trees or whatever.
So how was the decision made to stage the Redwood Summit?
Just by talking to each other. I mean, we came up with the idea. I was the first one to say it. I went back to the Mendocino Environmental Center, mentioned it to some other thrifters who were enthusiastic. We held a meeting and talked about it, and people were enthusiastic. So the way I like to describe the lack of structure or lack of same is that things happen by constituency, that if there's a constituency for something to happen, it happens. And people liked the idea of Redwood Summer and agreed to work on it.
When was it announced?
The first formal announcement was in March of 1990. It was mentioned in a newsletter that came out at the end of February. So, yes.
And did you have some particular responsibility then, once it was announced, in helping make it happen?
Well, I had no formal responsibility, but as the person with the biggest mouth who was promoting it, I felt a personal responsibility, and I assumed an organizing role.
And was there some formal committee that was brought together to work on it, or how did that work?
No, it's just the committee of the whole. We worked on it at Earth First meetings. We actually also expanded the circle, other groups, peace groups, local people who didn't usually associate with Earth First who liked the idea began to come to our meetings, and we welcomed them in and tried to spread the work around.
And what particular work were you involved in then during that period?
Putting out mailers to notify people, writing articles to go. I remember I wrote an article for the Student Environmental Action Coalition that was printed in their national paper. I made up packets when people would, we put out phone numbers. If you're interested in coming to Redwood Summer, call these numbers. And then if you called that number, we talked to people and took down their address, and I made up packets and sent them out to them, giving them maps, telling them what to expect, and things like that.
And where was this work based?
What city?
What city?
Well, I was working out of Ukiah, but it was, people were also working out of Humboldt County and Sonoma County and the Bay Area.
And were there particular plans by March for certain times that people were supposed to come, or certain places they were supposed to come to, or occasions?
Not yet. We were working on that.
And in particular, did you come in contact with people in an organization named Seeds of Peace?
Yes.
During that period? When did you first learn about Seeds of Peace?
I believe it was April of 1990.
And what stage was the Redwood Summer work at when you met Seeds of Peace?
It had made the national press. It was out on the national environmental networks, and it was mushrooming to the point where we were struggling to build the infrastructure to prepare for the influx.
In what circumstances did you come in contact with the people from Seeds of Peace?
Seeds of Peace called the Mendocino Environmental Center and said that they were interested in helping us run a base camp where we would feed people and things like that, which we didn't have much experience with. And we invited them to our next meeting, and they came.
Did you expect that people would come and stay for a long period, stay through the summer?
Some, and some we thought would come for a shorter period.
Uh-huh. So who were the Seeds of Peace people that you had struggled? Was it up to you to deal with Seeds of Peace? Is that part of your own work?
Many of us dealt with Seeds of Peace. Mm-hmm. I was one of them.
And what kind of arrangements were made with Seeds of Peace?
That they would run the kitchens in the base camps, and that was the main thing they volunteered for the infrastructure. They provide porta potties and gray water and all of those things that you need to have a group camping situation.
Explain what a base camp is, just briefly.
It's a camp out, a physical place where people camp who are going to be participating in the action.
And Stryker, I think you said you met the Seeds of Peace people in April, is that correct?
That's right.
And did you then participate in a series of meetings with them?
Yes.
And where did those meetings take place?
Well, they weren't meetings just with Seeds of Peace. We were having regular Redwood Summer organizing meetings, and they were attending them. One was in Ukiah, one was in Arcata, and one was in Laytonville, and then the final one in Berkeley the night before the bombing.
And were there other groups that were also incorporating themselves into the Redwood Summer work, like Seeds of Peace?
Yes.
And what groups were there?
Local peace groups. People from Abalone Alliance, the remnants of which had worked on the anti-nuclear campaign. There was something called Grandmothers for Old Growth. Groups like that.
So would it be right to say then that the Redwood Summer itself was like a coalition of these groups?
Yes.
Were there discussions of any terms on which Seeds of Peace or any of the other groups agreed to join with Earth First in Redwood Summer?
It was all contingent on the nonviolence code.
Would you tell us the conditions, what those conditions were, the terms?
The terms were that this was to be a strictly nonviolent Gandhian-style civil disobedience type of action, would include no sabotage, would include no violence.
And were there any, did those terms have to be negotiated with Seeds of Peace or any other groups?
Well, we drew them up at a meeting and wrote down a nonviolence code, but it wasn't a negotiation. We all were in agreement.
Okay. And what was the essence, what was the nature of the nonviolence code? How was it set forth?
Exactly what I just said. There will be no violence. There will be no verbal violence, there will be no drugs or drinking, there will be no property damage or sabotage. I believe those were the four terms.
Okay.